Hey, turn up the volume. It's the Storyworthy Podcast.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from 2601 Ocean Park Boulevard in Santa Monica, California. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's an office building in Santa Monica that houses a very large casting studio that has several studios in it. And the thing is, 2601 means it's 26 blocks from the ocean. So there's... It's on the west side of LA. There's one way in and one way out, and that's it. And you never have this audition at 1 p.m. The audition is always at 5 p.m.
Okay.
Every single time.
Okay. Anyway, the fact of the matter is we're coming from the casting studio.
Right. Because our topic is...
The auditioner's life.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Our guest tonight, Evan Gore, he brings forth the topic, Hannes, the auditioner's life. And you and I know a lot about this topic.
We do. We do. Because it's just a matter of... People don't understand. Our old acting teacher, Brian Reese, used to say this all the time. Your job is not to act. Your job is to audition. Acting is the icing
reward.
On the cake.
That's a reward. That's the reward. Right.
Yeah.
But auditioning is really what it's all about. And we're not complaining, are we, Hannes?
Well, we're complaining, but we shouldn't be.
You're
actors love to complain.
More than me. I try not to complain. I try to be very grateful for every audition I get.
No, I know. It's funny because it's like you're almost like... There's nothing better than the call, you have an audition tomorrow, and you're like, yes, I am worthy, perhaps story worthy, of of having an audition, and I will book this job, and it'll be a positive, and I'm going to read The Secret again, and blah, 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 and all that bullshit.
and then you're
like, what, 5 o'clock in Santa Monica, son of a bitch, and instantly go to the complaining. And you don't want to, but actors are born complainers.
Well, okay, we got to break it down for the folks out there, Hannes, because there's a lot of different, when you talk about auditioning, that's a huge word that means a lot of different things.
Yes.
I think you and I are most common, we are more familiar with the commercial world as it was,
yes.
As it were. I mean, there's also the theatrical world, but if you're in Hollywood, you have to have a couple of different agents. For instance, you have a commercial agent, and they hopefully send you out to commercial auditions.
Right.
Or you have a theatrical agent, and theatrical doesn't mean stage, it means... TV or film.
Right.
And it's very hard to get a theatrical agent. Most people that I know don't have one.
Right. What a lot of people, I believe Evan Gore, our guest who I've known since the first grade, told me this story once. It's like you can get a deal with a theatrical agent that says, the agent says, when you get yourself a job that pays... We will agree to represent you.
We will service your contract.
Which means they will simply take 10% and they have done nothing to get you that job.
Well,
this is very common.
But this is also important to understand is that why would an agent work for somebody if you've made them no money? Okay, let me break this down. One time I went in to see this agent trying to get a hosting agent because that's a different agent, isn't it? So now we have a commercial agent, a theatrical agent, and a hosting agent. So there's three different agents if you're also in the hosting world. So I go in and I'm trying to schmooze this guy up. And he says, Christine, let me break it down to you. I got to work for three different groups of people. I'm working for the people that have jobs. And they right now are paying me commission. Every time they work, they pay me. So I'm working for them. Then the second group of people are the people who have had jobs. They've paid me a lot in the past. They're not working right now because the show ended or whatever. But I want to work for them because they've already made me a lot of money. And then there's people like you who've not made me a cent. Now, who do you think I want to work for? And I really did understand that. And so when the agent says, if you get a job and bring me the contract, I will service it for you, I sort of understand that.
I do understand from their point of view. It's a weird kind of, and I don't see any solution to it, but it's like you would think, well, you got the contract, can't you just sign it? But it doesn't work like that. First of all, we don't understand the contracts the way they do. And, you know, you could be signing a ridiculous contract if you don't let some professional take a look at it.
The thing with agents, though, also, at least my experience, is that they're not necessarily working for you, at least at the level that I'm at. They're just fielding calls. So it's like whatever I get myself out for and whoever I get myself in front of, lots of casting directors or whoever, they're calling me in because of me. And that, and this girl, my agent, ATA, they happen to have my, they're my agent. But it doesn't mean they're doing anything for me. They're just taking the call, as it were. They're like the lawyer in the middle. They're not lawyers, but they're the people that can sign the paperwork.
Yeah, they're literally middlemen and necessary. And yeah, it's
some people work without agents, honest. Some people don't have agents. They just do their own thing.
Right. Well, some people are in shape, and then there's me. And
honest,
so,
I wrote a couple of different types of auditions down.
Yes.
You go ahead and tell the folks what these types of auditions are. What's a go-see? Go ahead, tell the folks.
The go-see is a audition for a print ad. And I'm not sure why it's called a go-see. It should be a go-get-seen or something. You basically go, they take two or three photos of you, full body, face, profile, and that's usually pretty much it.
You should be able to drive up for those auditions. You know what I mean? Like a drive-through go-see.
That would be awesome. They should take a photo of you in your car. That's exactly right.
Because
that's
all they really need is a look. They're just looking for looks.
Yes. Now, I have a story about that kind of. Do you want to hear this story now?
Do I?
See, now, 2601, also, I have a sentimental attachment to 2601 Ocean Park because that's where I met my fiance, Sherry.
Oh.
Because we were at a callback for a go-see. Now, those of you who are not actors don't understand how weird that is, because a go-see is just basically to see your face, the shape of your body, and whether or not they want to put you in a print ad. To have a callback for that is odd. It was also equal odd because it took 2.5 hours.
Wow.
And this is, you know, what cemented our relationship is we basically crammed 3 bad coffee dates into the 2.5 hours of sitting in the waiting room, you know. Just like, well, by the end of 2.5 hours, they're like, well, I guess I could eat with you. Uh-huh. You know, usually you got to be more careful than that in L.A., but it's like, okay, I can obviously stand to talk to you. So, but the other weird thing about the audition itself was you go in, there was a director who was Skyping from like Chicago. So there's like a little laptop on a stool. And he says, and because there's no dialogue and there's no acting and there's no action because you would be standing still, he's like, okay, look off to the left and... It was like for an antidepressant, which I should have been a shoo-in for. But it was like, look serious. Don't look too sad. Don't look too sad. And look noble.
Noble? What does that mean?
Exactly. I figured out eventually it was kind of like 1940s sort of like mural things where we're going to win the war and you look off with a determined look on your face. I think. I don't know what the fuck. And why did he have to Skype it? Why couldn't he just say, here are 3 words.
Right.
Everybody in there, you say... Look like this, look like this, look like this. Thank you. Good night.
I Skyped an audition just last week. I Skyped a callback. I had to do it at 8 a.m. So I got up at 7:15, getting all camera ready for 8 a.m. And then the guy's in New York because it's supposed to be 11 a.m. in New York, whatever. So I'm Skyping. I can't get him on the video. I can only hear his voice, but he can see me. And I can see myself. So it's like I'm watching myself audition.
That's bad.
And I'm saying these lines. So then we're done with the Skype. Okay, thank you. Goodbye. Goodbye. And I, you know, closed. It's weird. I closed the computer. And then my agent texted me. And sure enough, I did get put on a veil. And that's another part of auditioning. So first you audition, then you call back.
Right.
Now,
so
this
your
Skype
second audition.
Was a callback. This Skype was a callback. Okay. And then I was put on a veil, which means you may or may not have the job. But we like you a lot.
Right.
So I was put on a veil. And then 8 hours later, I got a text, you're off of veil.
Right. And so you are put on, you were like, and they say, hey, you know, next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're on a veil. Don't book anything else. Now, if you don't get the job, they don't have to pay you anything.
Of
course. They don't. And also, you actually got a text 8 hours later saying you didn't get it. That's awesome. Usually... You don't hear a word.
And you don't know if you're going to hear from wardrobe.
And you never know.
Hear.
Right. Sometimes you're like on a veil for something, or you don't even get on a veil, but then you call from Maria in wardrobe, and you're like, okay, I guess I booked it because
you I'm
need
giving
me
this girl my sizes.
Coming to Santa Monica at 9 a.m. tomorrow. God damn it. Why do I have to go to Santa Monica during rush hour in the morning? Son of a bitch. They're always, they all want to be out
there.
You
make me laugh. All right. We got a great storyteller coming up. But I also want to mention real quick, Hannes, you know, Storyworthy, we now have an app available for your Android phone. Mm-hmm. You can purchase the Storyworthy app for only $1.99 at Amazon.com.
Right. And the way you go to Amazon.com is through our website, storyworthypodcast.com. You buy 50 Shades of Grey, you buy this app, and you buy some tissues,
you guys,
and then you're all
set. Buy anything you want. We don't care. But if you can,
help
us out, you know, a lot of folks that don't have any money to donate, we get that. But this is a free podcast, so if you could just do one thing for us, that would be shop at Amazon through storyworthypodcast.com.
Do it.
All right, you guys, stay put, because in just a few moments, Evan Gore is on his way up with The Auditioner's Life.
Storyworthy tweets. So join us on Twitter and be our friend on Facebook.
And we're back. We have actually moved one block up the street to 2701 Ocean Park Boulevard, which is another very large casting agency. So not only is it all over there and there's no, the traffic's terrible, there's no extra parking because you're at Santa Monica and they're fascists and there's 1,000 actors all the time wandering around.
Now, wait a minute. Don't you park, though, at the park across the street? That's what I do. I always park at the park. Now, my girlfriend got a ticket there because you're not allowed to.
You're not supposed to.
No actor parking, clearly.
It says, by the way, that's when you know you're in Los Angeles, is a public park has a sign that says, no actor parking.
It's very
colored
true.
To the side. That's basically what it's saying, except it's actors.
It's very true. Gosh darn it. That is so true. But anyway, I do park at that park often. At 2701 Ocean Park.
2701 Parsham Park, that's right.
So what people need to understand is when you go into one of these auditioning places, there are perhaps 10 or 12 studios. So you look at the board, and the board is either a whiteboard or it could be like a flat screen TV.
Right.
And it'll tell you Studio 1, you know, Ever Ready Batteries, Studio 2, you know, Lipton
Iced Tea. Pizza.
Yeah.
And by the way, whatever audition you're there for, there are three that you think that you should have been called in for. And it takes you a long time to learn that you don't want to walk up to them and go, you know, I would be perfect for this.
Oh, that's
and then
so...
the 23-year-old girl with the list looks at you and
says, rolls her eyes.
Uh-huh. But what she's thinking is, fuck
yeah,
you.
She's rolling
Do you know
her
how
eyes.
Many people we called and how many pictures we looked at to get the people who want in here? Why don't you die in the parking lot across the street where there's no actor parking? You piece of shit. Too much?
What you're trying to explain is when actors try to crash an audition.
Yes.
They try to just show up and they say, well, wait, I'm a young mom. Why couldn't I be a young mom for these guys? But they have no idea what the backstory is, but they just want to show up and they try to sneak into the audition.
If you go on auditions with a regular basis, then they have seen your picture and have summarily rejected you without you even knowing it.
Yeah,
so exactly. Why force them to do it to your face?
All right, you guys, we have a real pro here right now. His name is Evan Gore, and he is a comedy writer. Hannes, you know he's been on the show before.
He has. He has been on the show before, and his middle name, of course, is who Hannes has known since the first grade. But that is not why he's on the show.
That's right.
There are people I've never met before who've been on the show, but Evan Gore, he brings it.
That's right. He does. He is a comedy writer specializing in kids animation for the Disney Channel, Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, and all sorts of outlets around the world. Now, currently, Evan has shows airing on the Hub Network, Pound Puppies, Littlest Pet Shop, and the Care Bears. Can you imagine his groupies, Hannes?
Yes, I can, and it disturbs me.
Previously,
also,
Evan...
he's recently opened a foundation, so that's not a good sign.
Previously, Evan was the head writer on The Emperor's New School, George of the Jungle, the Lilo and Stitch series, and he's also written episodes for Jimmy Neutron, Yin Yang Yo, and a variety of shows in Europe, and that must be impressive, because I said Europe.
Europe, sure, exactly, because who... likes weird animation better than Europeans.
That's right. Evan, he's also an alumni of Chicago's Second City Theater, the Aspen Comedy Festival, and the Atwater Public School, which he attended K-6 with Hannes Finney,
That's
my co-host.
Right. That's right. Atwater Public School.
And currently, Evan writes a short humor and opinion pieces for Twitter.com. You can follow him right there at Evan Gore. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Evan Gore.
I'm a pretty funny guy. So when I was a kid, I wanted to be a funny actor. I wanted to be a, and that's actually what I did when I grew up. I had listened to the whole you'll never make any money crowd and the be careful what you wish for crowd. But because I was a member of the rules don't apply to me crowd, another Hollywood career was launched. In the days before digicams and YouTube, though, the only way for a kid to be an actor was to go to auditions. So when I came to Hollywood, before I had a wife or kids, I went on auditions. Lots and lots of auditions. I would get work sometimes. I've been on TV. I have appeared on a sitcom or two, a commercial or three. But even in the best of times, I never actually made my living being an actor. So I walked away from it. I do not audition anymore. I ended my career as a Hollywood auditioner. It's not that things fell apart for me. I actually stopped auditioning because my life was changing, and I realize now for the better. Even though I never officially got anywhere as an actor, I went on auditions several times every week for sitcoms, TV commercials, voiceover jobs. I was very, very good at going to auditions. I put a lot of miles on my car. I kept holding my breath, I kept feeling hopeful, and I kept getting disappointed, but less so as I got more used to the rhythm of it all. Not everyone who plays will win this game. But as the Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes reminds us, you can't win if you don't enter. My story up to this point is a well-worn narrative because for those who wish to make show business their business, your gamble is just like a guy standing at a big craps table. The gambler approaches the table and spends whatever resources they have hoping to make their fortune. If you come to the table with more money or more time than somebody else, you get to play longer. It's been that way since the kings of the Middle Ages would assign some painter valet de chambre. Google it. In my pursuit of a business, I gambled my spare time, throwing chip after chip of time onto the green felt, hoping that I would win some chips back. Then, one day, I didn't have any more time to throw down, so I had to walk away from the table. When you walk away, the trick, of course, is to hold your head high and pretend like you really would rather go to the buffet. But for me, like most actors, being a paid performer is an addiction. You don't quit without squirming, trying to scratch the worms from your stomach, and you shout, "Dignity is for suckers!" loud enough for the security guards to hear you. Oh, I'm still complaining about it to this day. And maybe that's why I don't get invited to as many parties. Truth is, my life after my audition addiction was much better, brighter, and healthier. It's not this way for everybody, but my methadone was regular work as a kids' TV writer. I got married. We started a family. There was simply less and less time to spend in LA traffic for days on end that for me was not converting itself into income. But back to my audition days, it's an interesting side story. My talent agent from my TV commercials had embezzled thousands of dollars from his own company and his clients, including me. The company folded, legal actions were taken, and perhaps a year later or so, I think two-thirds of some of the money I was owed for a big national commercial for the hometown buffet restaurant chain finally came back to me. This wasn't the comedy I'd come to Hollywood to perform, but I never did get on SNL. I never did become a big comedy star, but that's all a couple of different stories. At a point after losing my commercial agent to mental illness, but before getting my money back, instead of blowing my brains out, I just stepped right back into the swamp and got me a new agent. One of the salespeople who survived that old agency signed me up with their new agency, which was actually a big modeling agency. They did TV commercials on the side, and they were happy to have me aboard as somebody to send out for auditions for a regular guy and commercials for auto parts, breakfast cereals, cough syrups, delivery services, blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. And in exchange, I got to brag that I was a client at a modeling agency. And even though I felt the tension coming from the fact that my life wasn't supporting a career of auditioning much longer, nonetheless, one fine day, I got sent on what models call a look-see for a magazine ad for Microsoft. A look-see is what this modeling agency anyway, called an audition for a modeling job. You go, they take a look, and see what you look on a Polaroid, and you go home. And no, I did not have to take my top off. I thought it would be extra cool to get this job because at the time, Microsoft was doing this big romantic print ad campaign that overlapped with their TV ad campaign. It had huge billboards, and they all would show some soulful scene about a hopeful person dreaming about what they could do in their life with Microsoft products. And then it was a big photograph, and they would draw the person's dream over the picture with white chalk. They were great-looking ads, and they ran in every magazine you picked up. So, hip, hip, hooray, when my agent called to tell me I was selected for this print job for Microsoft. We were both very excited for me, and naturally, I said, yes, I would love to do it. And that was all I heard from them for a while. And this was okay because I was preoccupied anyway. Like I said, I'd been working full-time writing these little screenplays for this new TV cartoon, and it was really one of the most fun jobs I'd ever had. And my wife, who was also writing with me, she was pregnant with our first child. She was already on maternity leave when this Microsoft little thing came along. And to make matters weirder, the one day that they wanted me for came right along when I was taking a week off from work to be with my new baby and my exhausted and swollen wife. But two things happened. Someone at the advertising agency wasn't communicating with my talent agency, and no one told the baby about how we grown-ups have something called a schedule. So the baby was slightly stubborn. What was supposed to happen was that the baby would come on a Tuesday, I would go do this Microsoft thing on a Wednesday, and make the same amount of money in one day as I was giving up by taking a whole week off. For those of you doing the math, this part of the story demonstrates that being a model in a magazine ad pays slightly more than you thought, but that writing on a cartoon series pays a lot less than you probably thought. Now, this wouldn't be a story if the baby came when she was supposed to and everything came out okay. Because that's not what happened. The baby stayed inside for an extra day. So it was on the Tuesday, the day that was supposed to be the delivery day, was the day that I found out that I was expected to be on set the next day, which was now delivery day. When the ad agency found out, they literally shouted over the phone to my commercial agent, whom I told I would just have to give up the job to someone else. But that was a problem. I'd already said yes. What I didn't know was that in the ad, I was going to be a young dad. And the only reason they picked me was because I looked like the little kid they picked. And he was really the centerpiece of this thing. I was the guy who looked like the dad of the kid. And now they'd set up $500,000 photo shoot around us. They rented a high school football field. They hired a whole crew, extras for the background, everybody. And somehow in all this, I was the most important person of all. So I go to my wife, who, because of the extra day in the hospital, was on her back, groggy from pain, and in between her first and second epidurals. I tried to explain everything to her as plainly as possible. I explained about the week's pay in one day part, and I asked what I should do. If I turn this down now, my agency would surely drop me, and who knows what viruses Microsoft would sneak onto my PCs for the rest of my life. So she said yes. She said I could accept the job and we'd work it out. Our OB had told us that the baby might make us wait even one more day, which only made me feel better about ducking out to earn a week's salary. Plus, my wife wasn't alone. Her parents and her sister were around, right? Right. After I'd spent the night in the hospital beside my wife, the doctor arrived for one of those painfully early morning visits to announce that we were not going to wait for the baby to come naturally. We're going to have a cesarean procedure today. Maternity nurse Sue was hard as nails and had very little patience for first-time parents like us. When I told her I was leaving to go work, she gave me one of the dirtiest looks I have ever endured. The strange luck for me was that the location of this Microsoft photo shoot was only about 5 miles away from our hospital. It took about 10 minutes to get there, which never happens. I was nervous when I got there because of how angry I had made the ad agency. The biggest shock of my day was how nice everyone was to me when I got there. A whole crowd of people gathered around me to express their sympathy that I was there to photo shoot while my wife was about to give birth in the hospital. While I was on set, I got the news that the cesarean was scheduled for 12:30 in the afternoon. It was just a few hours away. After assuring everyone that I was not going to be responsible for costing the ad agency $500,000, I got into costume. Sweatpants and a golf shirt. When an actor gets paid to be on set, it is a hard and fast rule that you will remain on set until the end of the day. It's why they have trailers, so they don't lose anybody. So it was an extremely strange circumstance when, after I'd been there about 45 minutes and got my wardrobe approved, they let me go. They told me to go be with my wife, take their cell phone number, and come back in 2 hours. Wow. So I drove the 10 minutes and was actually right back at the hospital, not realizing that the schedule had been sped up even further. When I arrived at the hospital, I was directed straight into the delivery room. My wife was on the gurney, and my sister-in-law was already scrubbed in and prepared to take my place. I dove into those surgical clothes and started scrubbing my fingers like I'd been taught in the hospital classes. And at this point, the doctors were more than happy to let the both of us go in and attend my wife's delivery. My heart was pounding like crazy as all this was happening so quickly. The anesthesiologist, who I already didn't like, was blasting Armenian dance music in the OR. None of us knew if it was protocol for us to tell him to turn that crap off. We just wanted everyone to do a good job taking the baby out. So I'll skip now the physical details of the delivery because they're disgusting. And you get right back to the magical part where the nurse pulled me away from the gurney to witness my brand new teeny tiny baby girl getting sponged and weighed and measured. And I even got to tap lightly on the viewing window so grandma and grandpa could come and see the baby. It was just like a TV commercial. And I was the star. An hour later, I was back on the set with a cute freckle-faced boy dressed in a football uniform smiling up at me, his modeling dad. And I look off into the sunset thinking about how I'm going to use Microsoft's Movie Maker to edit the film I took of his great game. When the ad came out, it was really nothing like I expected. It was not that cool ad campaign Microsoft had been running. It was just a plain picture, which makes me look fat and boring. Whole ad is boring. The little boy in the football uniform is cute, but so much for coming to Hollywood to be funny. This ad isn't funny. In fact, it only runs in one magazine and only for a short while. It's a dud. Still, when I pull the magazine off my bookshelf and look at my puffy, smiling face, I see a guy who just had a baby girl delivered at the hospital down the street, and it makes me very, very happy.
Get back to the hospital.
I went, just as I said, they said, hey, you can go, which of course never happens.
Okay, you're wrapped.
No, I wasn't wrapped. I was given a break.
Which... No. After the 2 hours. Then you go back, you do the shoot.
I think you misspoke. You meant leaving the hospital, going back. How long before you went back to the set?
Oh, I was on set for a few hours, but the baby had already been delivered.
I know. So when you get back to the hospital, the baby is like 5 hours old.
Yes.
And you are in full makeup.
Not much makeup because it was all shot naturally in sunlight and I was just supposed to be a dumb suburban dad. But
I see the picture. Hannes has the picture right here in front of us in the magazine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it isn't that flashy ad you were talking about.
No, it wasn't at all what I expected it was going to be.
Yeah, interesting. Because and you don't really look like the boy and he doesn't really look like you.
They thought so.
They
had banked their whole thing on it.
So how much money did you make on that ad, may we ask?
$2,000.
$2,000. $2,000. That's a good amount of money.
Fucker, that's more than I made for my one, which I'm going to tell you about. I made $1,200 on mine.
But I think $2,000 is a good amount of money. I mean, I'm saying, like, that day, I mean, unbelievable series of events. But $2,000 is a good amount of money.
It was enough for me to ask my wife in her drug-induced state, honey, can I do this? Should I risk? And to this day, she, denies it all. She was like, I was too drugged up. I don't remember that.
Well, also, the fact that it was so it was so close to the hospital. I mean, that really made it worthwhile. It wasn't across town.
That was a fluke, though.
Yeah, the circumstances were made because
circumstances were amazing.
They went crazy. They screamed at your agent. They said you couldn't leave. Then, obviously, once you're there, it's easy to be mad at people that you don't actually meet. And once you're there and you're a nice guy, they're kind of like... Okay, now we feel like assholes.
That was it.
Because they are assholes, right?
Well, that may be, but they don't want... but the last thing an asshole wants to do is realize it. So he's like, you know what? Let's give this guy 2 hours. And the fact that she had the baby in that window
was amazing.
Yeah, it is
beautiful.
Like a...
And the name of the baby is Microsoft.
We named her Microsoft
That's
XP.
Right. No, right. It's Willa, isn't
to date
it?
To date the story, the product was Microsoft XP. In tech terms, that's like, yeah.
Wow, nerds right. all across America are like, I know exactly when the baby's born. I have no fucking idea.
And it's, but it's, let's just say this, it's never going to run again. That ad's not going to run again. Let's hear about your hometown buffet ad. I want to hear about that.
It was just a commercial.
Come on.
Like so many of them, you know?
I know. What were you doing, like spooning out mac and cheese or what?
In the commercial
Look at the
for
sneeze
hometown
guard.
Buffet.
Was there a sneeze guard?
No. It was a family at home, and it was my family at home at the dinner table, but I was being a dad who was acting crazy and pretending to be a waiter.
Uh-huh.
So my family's at home in the dining room kitchen, and I'm pretending to be a waiter, and the whole concept was...
Oh, dad.
Yeah, exactly.
You knucklehead.
And the concept was have the restaurant experience at home with Hometown Buffet or
I
something
see.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Hometown Buffet is like not having the restaurant experience in a restaurant. It's like having a dumpster experience in a restaurant.
Listen, I still represent their interests, so I'm going to have to defend them.
Is that right?
No.
What are their... No.
I'm kidding.
But wait, now this is the one. I remember you telling me this after it happened. So that was you got the checks. You never got the checks from that ad because that was the guy who embezzled all the money.
Correct.
Your agent embezzled all the money.
My commercial agent screwed over a bunch of people, including me. And, you know, he went nuts.
That's a terrible thing.
Yeah, it was really
You know
bad.
What that agent's name was? Mitt Romney.
Hey, let's explain to the folks about regarding auditioning versus how many gigs you get. Because in other words, people say, oh my God, Evan Gore made $2,000 in one day. Like, why are you bitching? And it's like, because you have to understand how many, now you call it a look-see, we call it a go-see, or an audition. How many you have to
go?
Can somebody else explain that? Because I just get angry when
no,
I
honestly,
explain it.
Honestly, explain it perfectly. That. You go, you get your Polaroid taken,
no,
you leave.
I mean about
yeah,
how much money you get paid versus
right. yeah,
how
yeah,
many
yeah.
times
it's
you
like
go
compared,
out.
Even when you have a national TV commercial and it's like, you know, if it's actually running, first of all, it's not as much money as people think, but even when it is a fair amount of money, it's still, when you amortize it, I believe that is the word,
that
over
the word.
All the auditions that you've gone on.
The gas.
And this is why people are like, you know, well, why should TV people make so much money? Because... To get to the point where you are in a regular, in a television series, you have gone through a ton of shit. And there is nothing that will, you cannot feel guilty that you're like, listen, you are making hundreds of millions of dollars. I want an extra $50,000 an episode. To the network, it's nothing.
Now, you're even talking about a series. Or
I'm talking
like
about big-time money.
Well, I'm talking about just commercials. In other words, like, I audition probably... 40 times a year, and I get called back 25 times a year. So 65 times a year, I leave this house with full makeup on, camera ready.
Me
and
too.
Right. And I get called back, and then I go again, and then I book maybe one or two a year. So in other words, if I'm going to get scale that day, and that sounds like a lot, what is scale now? $600, and then you get some, residuals. So look, if you book a commercial, you might, if it's not, network national, it might be 15, 20, 25 grand. It does sound like
but
it's a lot.
Not, you can't live on that.
But you can't live on 25 grand. Plus, what
and
about the other
64 going to have it
times
because,
I left the house and I had a babysitter and I had to go to fucking Santa Monica at 5 o'clock.
Right. I shot a commercial for Vicks. And we shot 2 days, so that's 2 days at like $550. Okay, you are absolutely not guaranteed that this ad will ever actually air. So that may only be the only money you get. Also, you could easily be cut out of the ad, and it airs. And if you are not recognizable, then you do not get any residuals.
Both of those things have happened to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
You shoot, and you just get the day rate, and it never airs.
Yeah, or you shoot, you know, hey, Mom, I got a national commercial, and it never airs.
Or you get a commercial, and you think it's going to be national, and then they say, yeah, we're just going to put that up in Canada. Here's your $4,000. Go away.
Yeah,
right. And they don't know. And it's like you don't have anybody in Canada to check on it. Also, this is the other thing. There's no way to check. Can I just say about the one, I did one magazine ad, too, which I just realized now was also for Microsoft. And that actually shot. I played a... on one side, on one page, it was a two-page, and on one page was an incredibly hot, like, Italian guy who ran a shop selling bicycles somewhere in Milan.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my side was the German guy who makes the bicycles.
And you had glasses on, and there were two bicycles wheels right in front of
your face.
There's
a bunch of bicycles around me. They gave me an orange shirt to make me appear to have some sort of color. I have the orange shirt. Still, I got the shirt out of it. And it shot the day of the Super Bowl after 9/11.
Oof,
it was supposed to shoot the week before, but it shot that week. So I like missed the Super Bowl. I kind of like saw like little bits and pieces of it in the production truck, but we couldn't get any.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't.
That was the one that the terrorists won.
Yes, the terrorists. Right. The terrorists, the Miami Sharks.
Versus Al Qaeda.
Evan Gore, ladies and gentlemen, Evan Gore. No, I know the ad, Hannes, although you looked good in that ad, Matt. You fit the ad.
I'm not...
You looked German. It was a good ad for you.
Right, right.
Okay. Let me just throw this up because the title of tonight's show is The Auditioner's Life. I just want to say this. Our old acting teacher, Hannes, you know, Brian Reese, who we both love and adore, hopefully get him on the show someday. He tells us, people, you got to love the auditioning process because it's all you're going to do. And there's only about five or six people who don't audition. Evan Gore, who does not audition in this town? Go.
Celebrities.
And but who?
I don't know him.
Okay, let's see.
Writers don't audition.
Okay, let's think about it. Let's see. Meryl Streep, she doesn't audition.
No.
Maybe De Niro.
No. People who have won any sort of major award will have a meeting.
You know, but Tom Cruise used to be like, he could get any movie made he wants. He may not audition, but it's like, I remember, what was that show, Green Light or something on HBO, where they would follow a production all the way through?
Yeah, Green Lit.
And
it was, what is his name? Cole. What's his first name?
Gary Cole.
Thank you. Gary Cole, wonderful actor.
From The Office.
He was Will Ferrell's father in Talladega Nights.
Office Space. He had his little pinky out when he held the cup.
He's a great actor.
His pinky out.
And they show his audition for this thing. And they give it to another actor who was of the basics, kind of equal stature. But I'm thinking to myself, this is fucking ridiculous. I understand. It's the way it works, but it's like, you know Gary Cole can do it. It's like...
Well, yeah, but we had David Koechner in here, and he auditions. And Jim Beaver auditions.
I mean, these guys... That's what I'm saying. It's like maybe five people. That don't audition.
That's what I'm saying. So in other words, the auditioner's life, you better enjoy the process because it's what you're going to live.
Right.
If you get a job, that's the reward. But the job is auditioning.
By the way, can I ask, the modeling agency, was that Elite Modeling?
It was not.
Okay, because my first commercial agent was also a division of a modeling agency. So you would go to the lobby, like, to meet the things, and there were these, like, giant black and white posters of naked people without an ounce of fat on their body, like just in people walking around, you're like, no, I'm a client here.
First agent out in LA was called Players Academy or something or other, right? Players.
Look, that was a strip joint you worked at. That doesn't qualify.
So I go there to the waiting room like two or three times to meet my agent. And I keep seeing all these really tall black men and another tall black man. And he's very strong and he's very strong. And I realize it's a sports players agency.
Right.
They put me with a sports agency.
Yeah.
I play nothing.
Right.
Jesus
Christ. Well, no, you just look like someone that a NBA player would sleep with.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to play Shotgun Story Worthy. Are you ready, Evan Gore?
If you insist.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Story Worthy.
The game show where contestants spin the story worthy wheel of truth and tell a true 1-minute story on the topic they land.
So everyone, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Breakup. When you have children, as I have with my wife, you find yourself in social circles, and the kids all get along. And there's a certain flavor of parent who is quick to pair everyone up in a romantic way. So they'll see a little baby girl playing with a little baby boy, and they can't resist the adult temptation to think of them as a couple, which is disgusting if you have that separation in your mind to understand that they're just children and it's innocent. But like I said, there is a flavor of parent who doesn't basically have that maturity and only sees things in basic terms. So they see a boy and a girl, and they want them to see them as a couple. The problem is that what you don't, unless you have perspective, you don't realize that once they go to kindergarten or first grade, they separate and they find new friends. And as the grown-ups, when you're dealing with that other flavor of parent, you have to look at them and realize we've broken up.
Love that. Wow, that's really, really funny, Evan.
True?
And so you have how many children?
I have only two.
And you love being a dad, don't you?
Yeah, I kind of do.
By the way,
my first appearance, I was on episode, I think, 5 of Storyworthy.
Yes,
with
you were.
My fatherhood story.
That's right, that's right.
I've talked about it a few times.
But you beam when you talk about your children,
well,
and that's very beautiful.
They're awesome. Yeah.
And are you happy, though, that they're getting older? Are you happy to leave the baby stuff behind, as it were?
Yes, but they're not getting older. I mean,
my daughter's
in fourth grade, and my son's in
kindergarten. No, his children are actually live in the oxygen tube that Michael Jackson used to sleep in.
Do you have one what are those kids that get older with that old disease? What is that? You don't have
Benjamin
that.
Button?
Do you have one
liver
of those?
Disease. No. My point is that, yes, the baby years are behind me, but the years I'm in now are interesting, and wherever you're at in the spectrum of being a parent, there's going to be those parents who are behind you and those parents who are ahead of you. And the parents who are ahead of you are like, wait till you get to where I am. You're going to love it.
You know, my mom and dad, my dad's going to be 80 and my mom's going to be 77 this year. And I cannot believe they can possibly love me the way I love my daughter. Like, I mean, I know they do, but it's very hard for me
to believe that.
No, I know. I just feel like...
But also, parents and kids, we're all individuals and different people have different capacities for love.
And when I had my daughter, I mean, I had no idea I even had that whole side of me, which is like an animalistic, like, I will fucking rip your face off if you look at her wrong. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a Kevin Bacon quote when he saw his kids and said, yep, I'd run across the street and get hit by a car for that.
Yeah.
Or something weird, like that. He has some quote like that. Yeah.
Like, you were like,
and then the guy who hits him becomes part of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
And Evan Gore was like, yeah, my kid's coming out. That's terrific. I got to go to a microscope shoot right now. I got to go.
Yeah, he's checking his watch like, bitch, you want to push? I got a show to do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got to wrap this up. I would like to thank a couple of people. First off, John Thomas Griffith. He does our theme song.
Yes, he does. I've never heard of him.
I'd also like to thank Jorge Reyes. He does our sound.
I've heard of him. He's fabulous. Wait, let's all just like that. See? You wouldn't have heard that without him.
And we'd also like to thank Joe Slepsky. He's the producer of Storyworthy. He helps us out a tremendous amount, Honest.
A tremendous amount. He rewrites things. He cleans his glasses. He does. He throws the cat off the top of the refrigerator.
Without him,
the cat would not be in danger. And that's not something that we would want to be without.
He has thrown the cat around on occasion. I will say that. But here's what he does, Honest. Joe Slepsky, he keeps me in line. That's what he does.
Well, he just, he's a good sounding board.
He's from
the Midwest.
And
so obviously he's a decent human being.
All right, let's say thank you to our other Midwest friend.
Who eats way too much fatty foods and cheese.
Our other Midwest friend, Evan Gore.
Evan Gore, since
the first grade.
That's right.
And, Evan Gore.
I'd like to thank Story with the Podcast for making me a regular guest. I love it here.
Thanks, Evan.
And you'll be on the Shotgun Storyworthy.
That's right. I can't wait. And by the way, I better win.
And on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.